The most difficult part is to ensure that you make the best team out of two teams. You need to make sure that you identify all of them, because that's when you make a better team.
Straight Talk with Rolf Habben Jansen.
Rolf, when I first started writing about shipping many years ago, there were dozens of deep sea container lines, including some really iconic names. Now, following wave after wave of consolidation, there are only about, 10 global carriers, one of which I'm glad to say is Hapag-Lloyd, which has been at the heart of the consolidation process over the past two decades. So I'm curious, how has Hapag-Lloyd managed to survive when so many other have disappeared from the scene?
Good question. You know, I guess there's always a certain element of luck in that, yeah, as you can't control all the factors. But I would say that Hapag-Lloyd has always been, I think, a quality player that was respected by many customers, and that's at the heart of everything. You know, if you don't earn the business of your customers every day, then I think it's going to be very, very difficult. And apart from that, of course, over the last couple of decades, we've done a number of acquisitions ourselves. Yeah. And I think that certainly helped us also to get to a scale that is definitely needed in today's industry.
So what are the pros and cons between organic growth and mergers and acquisitions?
The benefit of it is that you typically can make progress quicker when it's around retaining or gaining market share. In many cases, it also gives you access to markets that you were not able to address before. Yeah? On the flip side of that, of course, M&A typically costs quite a lot of money. Yeah? So as such, you better make sure that if you do something like that, that in the end, you are the better owner of that other asset. Otherwise, you don't create value, but you actually destroy it.
Yeah, I can see from the choice of companies that you have merged with, there's been definitely a geographic advantage, starting with CP Ships, which was a very much sort of North American consolidator itself, CSAV from Chile, United Arab Shipping Company, so the Middle East, and then more recently, Deutsche Afrikline and Nile Dutch. So was that luck, or did you seize the opportunity, or were they singled out?
I think it varies. I guess in most cases, we've always been looking for those type of players that would really bring something extra, yeah, to Hapag-Lloyd. As you already mentioned, CP Ships, very strong presence in Canada and Mexico. Even if you look at the markets today, we still have very strong positions in those markets, even if it's meantime over 20 years ago that transaction took place. I think CSAV, Latin America, very complementary to what we did. I mean, we were stronger on East-West. They were stronger on North-South. And I think with UASC, that was not only geographical, as they were very much present on routes that we were operating on as well, but they certainly also had an asset base that we did not have with bigger ships. And then, of course, we did a number of smaller transactions as well, and those are typically to tap into niche markets.
So it's always struck me that the easy part is choosing who you want to acquire or merge with. The difficult part comes following the actual transaction. You've got to win over the customers, the staff, your vendors, your partners, the IT systems. And I have written a lot about different mergers and acquisitions over the years. And to be fair, they haven't all gone well. So what would you say you've learned over the years, and what is the easiest bit and what is the trickiest bit?
I think the easiest bit is probably that there are some big decisions that you have to make early, yeah, around what is, for example, going to be the platform, what is going to be the organizational model. I think those type of choices you have to make early. The most difficult part is to ensure that you make the best team out of two teams. Because, you know, you always have a little bit this unconscious bias towards those people that you know. Yeah? And in the end, you will always find that if you team up with somebody else, that they have some very great and talented people that you do not have. And you need to make sure that you identify all of them, because that's when you make a better team. And that's probably one of the most important, if not, you know, sometimes a little bit underestimated, a little bit hidden benefits of teaming up with other companies. I think that one of the biggest pluses of teaming up or combining forces is that you find more talent, and that the combined team is typically stronger than the two teams individually.
Finding that talent, identifying that talent must be quite hard.
It is, but I mean, it's also a matter of just making sure that you dedicate sufficient time to that. No, if you, and that starts with me and also with my counterparts, potentially in a company that you acquire, if we don't spend the time on identifying the best people for the job, then we don't do our job properly. I mean, many things in when you combine shipping lines are fairly easy. Yeah, the synergies to, that you can achieve on the cost side are not so difficult to achieve. What is much more difficult is to create that new, you know, culture or that new identity, which makes the combined business better than the individual ones that you had before that.
Well, yeah, corporate culture is very important. And Hapag is very much seen as a German line. And yet you have merged with a Chilean line, an Arab line, and a North American line with very different cultures. So again, I mean, just getting that culture right must be really challenging.
Yeah, but it's also about making sure that you then, you know, mix the teams. I mean, if you look at Hapag today here in Hamburg, I think we have over 40 nationalities working here in the headquarters. Yeah. If you look at the number of people that are in our higher management ranks that come from CSAV or even CP Ships or UASC, that's a big chunk of the management that we have. And that's also how you blend those cultures. You know, respect what they bring because they always bring something that you don't have. And that is something you have to identify. And then you can truly become better together, yeah, or move forward quicker.
But how do you also reassure your customers? Because I know from experience of writing about transactions of the past, while some transaction is going on, all your competitors are taking aim at your customers. So how do you go about reassuring them as well that the end product is going to be better?
I think in the end, when you try to bring it down to something that's fairly simple, in the end, I think three things are really important when you bring two companies together. The first one we already discussed is people. The second one is systems, where you need to be clear on how you want to set it up. And the third one is customers. If you can retain the customer, select the best talent, and do a smooth transition on the IT side, then you're good. All the rest comes more or less automatically. And I think that over the years, we have developed at least a fairly good model to do that. When I look at how we, when we merged with CSAV, I think we lost 2 or 3% volume for about 3 months. Yeah. And after that, we were back on the level that we were before. And since then, we have been growing. And in the case with UASC, I think we never, ever lost any volume because when you looked at the combined business, it continued growing also right after closing. So to me, the key to that is really to have focus on these three things that I mentioned before. It's people, it's systems, and it's customers.
Well, systems in particular, because I remember past transactions haven't always gone well because people have tried to keep two IT systems going together, not Hapag-Lloyd, I hasten to add. And I think one of your predecessors said you've just got to go really quickly. You've got to just get rid of one system and stick to the other one. Is that correct?
Well, I think you have to be clear on what you want to do. And you're right. You need to move to one platform fast. And you know, my hypothesis would probably be that if you put two large liner companies together, that they both have a system that allows you to move containers. Yeah, and as long as that's the case, you know, then you just need to make sure that you take the best platform and then move everything onto that one platform. And doing that in and of itself is not that complicated. I think when you look back at transactions that were not so successful, then in many cases, you see that people are looking for a best of breed type of setup from day one or day two. And that just turns out to be very, very difficult. Whereas if you move everything to one platform, you take out a lot of technical complexity and you also make it a lot easier for the customers and also for the people. And you also then know what to train.
So looking at everything, where do you achieve the biggest cost savings? Because really that's partly what it's all about. You want bigger market share, but you've got to get synergies and cost savings as well, haven't you? So is it in headcount, amalgamating fleets or other ways of cutting costs?
I always say that when you look at the synergies, they in essence, what you do is you put two companies together, you reduce the number of services, and you increase the size of the ships that you deploy. That is what in the end drives most of the synergies. If I take an example of what we did with CSAV, for example, we had both services from Europe to South America. Those were two services. I think we both operated them with ships of 3,000 or 4,000 TEUs. And then we replaced that with one service that had a pretty similar rotation than the individual services had, but we deployed ships of 8,000 TEUs. That saves you a humongous amount of money. And in the end, it's always about simplification and scale. And in a way, I would say that in shipping, that's relatively easy. Reduce the number of services and deploy bigger ships.
What about branding? Because some lines who have been engaged in a lot of M&A activity, have retained the brands of the companies they bought. You haven't. Why is that?
I think that in the end, we did not do that because we felt that the point that you also made in the beginning about culture and identity is important. Yeah, and if you want to be clear that you are going to one new identity, then you may need to refresh a brand or you may need to show it a little bit different. But it's very important that you go to one brand. If you would retain the historical brands of, say, Hapag-Lloyd and CSAV or Hapag-Lloyd and UASC, then you will see that a lot of people in their minds remain in those old companies, if you want. Yeah. And I think that's where, if you think ahead, it's much better to go to one brand, and that helps people to go and see the future. And I think our experience with that has definitely been good.
Yeah, and I'm guessing it's quite expensive as well to maintain numerous different brands as well.
It is, but I mean, I've also lived through it myself. I mean, when I started working, I was at Netlloyd and we were taken over by Deutsche Post, which at some point in time then became Danzas and DHL. And of course, it's for people that have worked at these companies for a long time, it's difficult to say goodbye to a brand, but it's also good because, you know, by stepping away from that old brand, you also create a new perspective. And sometimes it then also helps if you do simple things. I remember when Deutsche Post and DHL brought together a lot of companies under the DHL brand, they changed the visuals of the DHL brand and made it red and yellow instead of red and white. That was a small change, but it made a difference for people in the field because they felt that, okay, we're going to be operating under a different name, but it's also going to be a new company because it has a different brand or visual or whatever you want to call it.
Now, we talk about the number of companies you've merged with or acquired over the last 20 years or so, but you've also been the target of a takeover bid at least once. How did you manage to fend that off?
In the end, when people become a target of M&A, in the end, that's a decision that needs to be made by the shareholders. I think Hapag-Lloyd was a target in 2008. Yeah. And then, you know, the shareholders got together and they basically decided that they did not want to do that. And of course, the best guarantee that you can give that a company does not become a takeover target is, you know, just delivering steady progress over many, many years, because that will hopefully give your shareholders also the confidence that their best option is actually to stay with you and not to consider selling.
And presumably it helped you have the support of the city of Hamburg. And I think I get the impression that Germany felt it's very important to have a homegrown shipping line as well. Would that be fair?
I think Hapag has always been important for Hamburg, both for the port, but also as an employer in the city. And yes, I think the value of that has been recognized, certainly by the city of Hamburg. And of course, also when you look at other shipping lines, then that's also from an historical perspective, that's not so odd. Yeah. Even if today we look at some of the lines that are out there, it's clear that there are people that are behind it that find that important. And I think that's also very understandable. And I think we can be very grateful that the city of Hamburg and some of our shareholders have been supporting us over the years, because without their support, you know, an attempt like there was in 2008 could have been successful.
Now, at the moment, I know you're in the middle of talks with Zim, and so perhaps you can bring us up to date on that a little bit. But how much more scope is there for consolidation in the container shipping industry? Because there's been so much over the years, and there must be a limit, I would have thought, to how many times you can have these mergers and acquisitions and consolidation.
That's true. On the other hand, it's an industry that continues to grow. Yeah, and I think, you know, whilst we've had a period from 2010 till 2020 where growth was very, very modest, if we look back at the last couple of years, we've again seen that this industry grows quite fast. I mean, in the end, it's important to look at the growth on the dominant legs, because that drives how much capacity is required. And when you look at the last couple of years, we've seen growth figures again in high single-digit numbers. I think we were close to 10% in 24. We were at 8% or so last year. And this year, we are again above 5%. So that means that you look at an industry that even over the last 2.5 years has probably grown with 20-25%, yeah, in terms of capacity that needs to be deployed. And when you look at some parts of the world, well, there's still a lot of growth potential. I would not be surprised if we're going to see considerable further growth in this industry in the next one or two decades. And that will also mean that the players in this industry will need to continue to grow. And you can do that in two ways, as you already mentioned, either organically, which is certainly a good way to grow, but I still think that there will be some further consolidation, even if it will never come down to three lines globally or something like that. But I think that, you know, at some stage to have anywhere between 5 and 7 large global lines is not a picture that would be very unlikely if you fast forward 5 or 10 years.
But do you get any feedback from your customers that they feel they're losing choice or they're losing the personal touch because everybody's got so big they no longer have the personal relationships with their trade managers and account managers?
I don't know. I mean, keep in mind that the way that we sell is typically direct and indirect. We, on the one hand, have our direct customers, but we have also a lot of customers that are being served through forwarders. Yeah. And also in those markets, you typically see consolidation. I mean, if you look at the size of the large forwarders, they've grown a lot as well over the last one or two decades. And also when you look at our large direct customers, also many of them have grown. So yes, you see more scale in shipping, but you also see more scale generally in many other industries. So I don't think that the number of customers tells you all that much. And let's also not forget that everything that's happening on the digitization and AI front, you know, that's where, at least in some segments, that personal touch will over time become a bit less important, even if it will always remain relevant.
So we've been talking about consolidation between container lines, but what about, as you just mentioned, forwarders or ports? Is that another area of scope for more merger and acquisition activity?
I think we've seen, if you look at the shipping, that more or less all the large shipping lines have been very active on the terminal front. We were probably a little bit late to that party, but also we are building up our terminal business and have been acquiring concessions and terminals over the years. And of course, when you look at a Maersk or if you look at the MSC or CMA, they've been very active in that field and they operate very large portfolios, which makes sense. Yeah.
I referred to Zim earlier. Can you give us a little update on where things are with that acquisition? Or is it a merger or an acquisition?
No, in the end, I think, you know, technically it's an acquisition because we would do it. It would be a cash transaction. Yeah. In practice, you know, I would like to think that it's going to be a little bit more of a merger because it's also a type of company that is, I think, quite complementary to what we do. I think they have some great capabilities that we do not have. And I do believe that, you know, joining forces could make us better together and could also make us more robust going forward. In terms of where we are, the merger agreement has been signed. The shareholders of Zim have voted in favor. And now we go through all the regulatory processes, which, as we all know, take time. And based on that, I think I would still say that, you know, my current assessment would still be that timeline that we indicated when we signed, which was a closure towards the end of the year, is probably still the most likely scenario.
Well, perhaps we can talk about that on another occasion, but thank you very much, Rolf. I think this has been really enlightening and look forward to talking to you next time.
Thank you. You're very welcome.
Straight Talk with Rolf Habben-Jansen.